You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. North Carolina's House District 16 includes Pender County and the eastern portion of Columbus County. Carson Smith is the Republican nominee. He served Pender County as sheriff for 16 years after first winning the seat in 2002, but he served in the public safety sector for more than three decades as a volunteer for the local fire department and rescue squad. He served as a sheriff's office dispatcher and as a deputy sheriff in Pender County. He's also worked for the Topsail Beach Police Department and the North Carolina Highway Patrol. He recently completed a term as president of the North Carolina Sheriff's Association, and he joins us now. Carson Smith, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel.
And just a reminder, this interview is pre-recorded. Tell us first, after a career in public safety, you're retiring as sheriff, and you've told us that you would be retiring whether you were running for the legislature or not. Why do you want this job?
Let me answer just the first part. It is time, and I knew it would be time for me to retire. I think I've been sheriff 16 years. The gentleman before me, Sheriff Harville, was there 16 years. That's 32 years with just two people there. I'm not one of the ones that say, hey, I need to sit here until they have to wheel me out of the office. So when I got to the point that I knew it's time to bring somebody in, it's time to do something new for the county, as things start to change, even my circumstances change, I decided not to run. At some point after that, the position that was formerly held by Chris Millis, the House 16 is held by Bob Mueller now, he was appointed to fill out the term but was not going to run. I began thinking about that opportunity, mostly because I had been working in Raleigh as part of the leadership of the Sheriff's Association in North Carolina, working with both the current governor and the past governor, working with their secretaries, the Council of State, working with legislators now, and to make things happen. We worked on a lot of opioid stuff, the STOP Act, the HOPE Act. I'm currently on a board that's working on the rules and the laws to help get all the sexual assault kits that are back all tested. So my interest, I think, in running for this office, the genesis was there. I think what I've been able to do there, and given the fact that I'm not that old, I'm only 51, I am retiring, but certainly am not through with my life and just want to have something to do. That's where it started. I began to talk to folks and say, hey, I can offer this. Sure, my specialty may be public safety, but, I'll take what I know. I'll take what I know of Raleigh, what I've done already, and then go up there and start to help make a difference, hopefully, in bringing jobs to this district and education, trying to continue improving education and other things.
Now, you were on the front lines of 1996's Fran and Bertha. Those were pretty serious storms for this region, and you, I understand, had just returned from some time in Durham as a state trooper. Now we've just been through Hurricane Florence and Hurricane Michael. How do you view what's happening with the weather? Does it seem to you that we're seeing an increasing severity in the storms? How do you process this?
Just last night I saw folks talking about climate change. Is it climate change? I figure that's probably where your question may be going towards. Here's what I believe. If the severity of hurricanes are heat pumps, thunderstorms are a way for the atmosphere to get rid of heat. So if there is global warming or if there is climate change, and I don't think the climate's always changing. I don't know that 100% of it can be attributed to humans, but there's always going to be a change on the earth. But I think part of what we may be seeing, and it's possible that if you see more severe weather than usual, it's the atmosphere's way of getting rid of heat. Which is, if you argue...
Does there need to be a human response to that, though, along with things like rising seas? And the reason that I'm asking this is because we just saw the climate report come out from the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. That was examining more than 6,000 scientific studies and using research from more than 91 scientists. the big takeaway from that was, if the world doesn't take action now, the Earth is going to see catastrophic changes as early as 2040. Now, are you saying that that may or may not be a fact-based report?
I don't know where the facts are, where they got it from that report. Is there a climate change? Is it cyclical? Do we see times when it's hotter and times when it's cooler? I believe we do. Is it somewhat or all or none attributed to humans? I don't know that. And I'm not ready just to say we have got to give up our economy. We've got to do everything just to turn the thing around. I think it's worth watching. I'll say this. When I was in middle school, I remember this, and my memory's not the best in the world, but there's some things you remember. I distinctly remember them talking about us going into an ice age. So am I a little skeptical that they are 100% sure that of what the comet's doing and that humans are doing it? Yes, I'm skeptical. Is it something we need to continue to watch and look for maybe more proof that something may be happening? I think that'd be prudent.
So last question on this front. As a state legislator, do you think there's any response that the General Assembly needs to make to this kind of data?
Not right now. I think, I think we watch. Even if there are things governments can do, that would probably be more of a United States government task to try to do something that would oversee environmental protection. That's a bad way to say it. I love this state, and I love the environment, and I love the natural resources of this state. But when it comes to specifically global warming, I don't know if anything right now the North Carolina legislature would have its hands in.
There is a great deal of finger-pointing in the political realm when it comes to figuring out who responded to the news of Gen X in the drinking water supply in the most effective way. Are you satisfied with the Republican legislative response? And what more, if anything, do you think needs to be done to ensure a clean drinking water supply?
I've tried to evaluate this looking backwards, and it's very, very hard with all the conflicting information coming out. I don't know that I can sit here and tell you who did what, who should have done what, but I can tell you this. Going forward, whatever we drink, whatever comes out of our tap, we've got to be sure that we do know. We've got to be sure that the protection is in place for any industry that is putting their waste products into any body of water, into the air. We've got to know that. It can't be, oh, look what we found, and then if somebody finds it, hey, well, let's don't tell anybody. So it's very hard to answer the question looking back, but I think going forward, we've got to be sure that what we put in our bodies, we know what it is. And in some cases, if the scientists tell us, you know, the levels, if it's below this level, then I think we do have to trust them. If it's, but not to know or not to be aware or not to have, and I'm not a big government guy, but part of public safety is drinking water. So being able to know what's in there and being able to decide, is this too much? Is it not enough? Do we need to stop it completely? I think it's the most important thing.
There's been a pretty broad recognition that North Carolina is having a hard time attracting and keeping good teachers. Right now, North Carolina hovers around number 35 out of the 50 states in terms of being a good place for teachers to work. What do you think needs to happen at this point to improve the quality of life for teachers here?
My mother was a teacher. First grade for a first and maybe a second, first and second combination for 30 years. So I have a soft spot for her and all the teachers I had growing up. I think the legislature over the past couple of years has done a pretty good job in getting pay for teachers up. I think there's more coming. They've said it's coming. I'd like to continue that. I think education, to me, is one of the biggest things that the state government does. Local governments do their thing. The federal government should have things that they do. But when it comes to key things like transportation and education, that is exactly what legislators need to be doing. I want to continue that, not just for teachers. There's a lot of other school personnel. There's aides and there's a lot of other folks sometimes that may get overlooked. But everyone that has anything to do with our teaching our students and helping our students to grow, I think we need to make it easier for them. We need to make it even more attractive as kids come out of school and maybe want to go to college and maybe think about, hey, do I want to be a teacher? Well, you know, if I can make $30,000 versus $60,000, I may decide I may want to become a teacher if I know that the support's there and the money's there to make a good living.
And so you would consider that a budget priority?
I do.
Do you believe that North Carolina should encourage offshore oil and gas exploration in the Mid-Atlantic? Why or why
not? If there's one thing that we might in the North Carolina legislature we may not have a whole lot to do with, it may be offshore exploration and offshore drilling. I do have mixed feelings about it. I think if I'm in Washington and I'm responsible for this country, where we are 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 50 years from now, I think it's very prudent to know what we have and where we have it. Do I, as somebody who's grown up on the coast of North Carolina all my life, necessarily want to have oil platforms where we can step across them everywhere? I don't. But I think it's probably, it may be a necessity, and we're not just talking about oil, we're talking about natural gas. And we're talking about an industry that has done, I think, a really good job, better job, of trying to be sure when they do things, and they do things offshore in other parts of the world, that they do them safely. But once again, in Raleigh, because this is more than 3 miles off the North Carolina coast, we're not going to have a whole lot to say about that.
Right, but as I understand it, the federal government will take input from state legislators and coastal stakeholders.
Input, yeah. I'm not going to go to Raleigh and just spend all my time to try to talk the federal government out of doing exploration to let us know what we have as far as natural resources off the coast.
There are some constitutional amendments that will be on the November ballot this year. There are six of them, and all five former living North Carolina governors, three Democratic governors and two Republican former governors, have spoken out against the two amendments that would transition judicial vacancy and state elections board appointment power to the legislature. Would you support the constitutional amendment that transfers that power from the governor to fill judicial vacancies to the legislature? And why or why not?
The argument that, and you're right, it's been done like that a long time. The argument that I like more than any of them in favor of the amendment is that rather than having one person kind of pick who they want, it may be better to have several people that have input that can maybe help. I hate it when I hear take the politics out, in quotations, because I don't think you ever can. I don't think we ever will in these kind of things. But to have input from several people, possibly folks from different parties, depending on the makeup of the legislature and who's in the governor's office, I don't think it's going to be a bad thing. It's one of those that I'm not going to sit out and work the polls for it to pass. I don't think it's something that we see is obviously, you know, the question is a Democratic governor, a Republican legislature is just happening now. I don't think I would mind it if it were the Republican and the governor matching and the Democrat in the legislature. So that's the way I look at it. And if I don't mind it either way, depending on who's in party, then I think I'd probably that's why I'd support that and vote for that.
What would you say, though, because some people are arguing if it ain't broke, you really shouldn't be messing with the state constitution because that's a hard thing to put back. What do you say to that whole idea?
That is a broad picture. And let me say for a lot of these constitutional amendments, that is, if I have any heartburn, that's my heartburn. If it's not in the Constitution, then it's left up to the legislature to pass laws. And the legislature in this case could have just passed a law to do it. I don't think it's a bad thing. So a lot of these constitutional amendments I will support, but in the broad picture, I really don't like touching the Constitution that much. That's the broad view. But if it's something I agree with, I'm going to vote for it.
When you look at the state's potential for economic growth, where do you see that potential? And what do you think the state legislature could be focusing on in terms of helping to grow the economy?
I think the and that's huge. That's huge in the district I'm in, the rural districts of especially Western Pender and Eastern Columbus, jobs. If the Commerce Department, I think, needs to – I think they do probably need to do a better job of recruiting to get business in here. I believe the legislature in the past several years has done a great job to improve the business climate. I think that's one thing that a lot of people would argue, whether they're Democrat or Republican. I think the business climate in this state has improved. I think there's still a ways to go. And part of it is – our part of it is, again, to give the Commerce Department what they need to go out and find industry to come in here. Make it easy for folks who want to start their own businesses. Make it easy for them to start homegrown businesses, which is always great, too. It supports that person, that family, but then it creates jobs and supports a whole lot of other families. Education, we go right back to that. A workforce that is educated, a workforce that industry can see is here and in place of folks who can come in and work in their industry is a huge selling point. And so as we continue in improving and funding education, I think that'll help the economy also. And then maybe some other little things. In the district I'm running for, just things that are taken for granted in other places like wired internet, internet service, as far as helping the folks stay connected, helping them with their education, helping them know what's going on, is something that I really believe in, and I think as some incentives have started to try to make that happen, that we continue it. You know, the government, in quotations, help bring phone lines to every house. They help bring electricity to every house, and I think we're at the point now where wired internet is just as important, maybe not quite, but almost as important as the other utilities.
You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. We're talking with Carson Smith, former sheriff of Pender County and the Republican nominee for North Carolina's House District 16. He faces Democratic nominee John Johnson. Today's interviews are pre-recorded. Farmers in the state of North Carolina are facing a number of challenges, and there are certainly the hog farmers who face a growing burden of nuisance lawsuits, and we're talking about neighbors who've filed suit against them for smells, flies, health effects from the hog lagoons. And we're also talking about farmers across the board who are facing losses from tariffs and from Hurricane Florence. What do you think the state needs to do to help these farmers recover?
There's a couple issues there. The hurricane, you know, that happens. We can maybe foresee it's going to happen sometime. We cannot predict when it's going to happen. That's one of those things that we just have to work our way through. The lawsuits against some of the farms that we're seeing.
I mean, those awards have been capped by state law, but
right.
Still.
I hate to see those. My district, again, I'm sitting in the middle of Wilmington. My district is very rural. I grew up in a rural area, although it's becoming a little more populated now, on the east side of Pender County where I actually live. But the western side of Pender and the eastern side of Columbus, that's farm country. And
there are hog farms in
there
Pender
are
County.
Absolutely. One of the lawsuits you're talking about was a Pender County farm. I think it's wrong when the laws, again, they're using in federal court. They know that's their best shot, and it's attorneys that aren't even from this state have come in, and in some cases gone out to try to find folks to be plaintiffs. It's America; they can do that, and I think it's wrong.
But what about those neighbors who do live close to those hog lagoons and do struggle with breathing issues and flies and the smell?
In many cases, most cases, I believe, the farms were there before the folks moved there. Now, that's not true for every case, but I know for a fact many of them are. So if you've got a farm, you're providing you're providing food for the country. You're doing what you've done and what your parents done and what your grandparents have done, and then people move in next to you, and then and they're there for many, many years in some cases, and then claim a nuisance. It's not a great situation. I wouldn't imagine anybody wants to live directly beside a hog farm, but this is what happens in rural areas. And I think we have got to, I personally, and hopefully the legislature, will do what they can to protect those farmers. And you're right, they already have. Capping that, I think, was good. There may be some other things that can happen, but when you have farms, you're going to have things that might not be pleasant to neighbors. And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, there are other ways of managing hog waste. North Carolina hasn't required it. And, you know, we look at what happened with Hurricane Florence and some of those hog lagoons overflowing and then going into the waterways. Is it time for state legislators to start looking at the way hog waste is managed?
I think to study Florence and to see, and we do hear, and we do know there were at least a few that were the lagoons that have problems. When you look at the number of lagoons that are in eastern North Carolina, you know, I think it makes you feel good to know that they all didn't bust, they all didn't leak, they all didn't fill our rivers up with waste. But yes, to take what we have learned in Florence, which we learned in Floyd. We learned in Floyd and in Fram because we had significant flooding in both storms. Florence kind of even went higher than Floyd did, which, by the way, all the F storms, I don't know, Fran, Florence, and Floyd. But to take what we learned, the ones that did breach, maybe they need to be fixed. And we're in Pender County, we do listen and we do hear things like that. And it seems that Florence was not as big a problem. Even though the floodwaters were higher, Florence was not as big a problem on the Hog Lagoons as Floyd was. So I'd like to think that things have been done since then. And we still need to continue because that becomes an environmental thing. We know floods are coming. So if there's anything to do on that front to mitigate damage that could be caused, I think we definitely need to follow up on that.
Let's take a look down the road a little bit, and let's assume you win the seat in House District 16. You're looking back at the end of your first term. It's now 2020. How is the state different for your having served?
The thing that stands out in my mind that I want to stand out in 2020, and I don't know if we'll solve the problem by then, but I want to have tackled it, is mental health. The mental health system in this state, I believe, is broken. And I've seen that as sheriff. I think so many things you can tie into mental health. The opioid problem, to me, if I could wave a wand and all the opiates and opioids in the country would disappear, it would be something else. It's an addiction problem. It's more of a public health problem to me than a law enforcement problem. We can't arrest our way out of this problem. So that's tied into mental health. The problems we see in the school with school violence and students, most times they can at least somehow be tied back to mental issues that maybe should have been handled before it got to that situation. Things like involuntary commitments. When I started as a sheriff's deputy a long time ago, I remember we used to maybe get an involuntary commitment, and we would just say, oh, my goodness, that's 8-9 hours that I'm going to be tied up trying to go pick this person up and trying to find a place to help get them help. You know, my shift, this is what I'm going to be doing. Well, now we have folks that sit in the emergency departments of hospitals, and I've got these personally, over 2 weeks because there's no place for them. The mental health system, in so many ways, I think, is something that we as a state have kind of turned our back to.
And is that a funding question then? And we have just a few seconds left, but is that how you start to address it in Raleigh?
Yeah, funding is absolutely a part of it. That's exactly, maybe not where we start, but it's something we'll have to take care of through funding.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Carson Smith, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks also to John Johnson. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.